This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 212, brought to you by Evangelion 1.01, Drawer Boxes by CollectionDrawer.com, and In Stock Trades.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 212. My name is Paul Montgomery, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, and Ron Richards.
Hello, Connor and Paul.
Hello, Ron.
Hello, Connor.
Hi, Ron. Okay. Hi, there's people out there.
At iFanboy.com, we like comics, and we read comics, and every week one of the guys picks their favorite comics, and they write about it on the website, and we all talk about it here on this podcast, along with various other topics of interest. Stay tuned to the end of the show to find out about December giveaways.
We're doing lots of giveaways in December, so definitely, stay tuned to the end. You'll hear all about them. So,
before we get to the show, quick reminder, warning, this is a review show, and we will be talking about the things that happen in this week's books, and we don't care if you haven't read them. We will spoil them anyway, so deal with it. And this week, Ron had the pick.
Yeah, this week was first off, before we get started, this past week was Thanksgiving here in the States, so we want to hope everybody in the iFan base in the United States had a great, happy Thanksgiving, and to the rest of you in the rest of the world, we hope you had a good Thursday.
And that's where Josh is right now. He is
He is
mired in Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving fun.
In-law fun.
Yes.
I'm not putting any kind of quality value on that or not. I'm just saying
No judgment.
No judgment at all.
Yeah. Anyway,
we're in the wedding party, but whatever.
Not that anyone noticed. So not only was it Thanksgiving, but it was a fuck of a week this week.
If you went
to the comic shops on Wednesday, I actually had 25 books on my list.
I had 24.
Oh, it was miserable. But it was a good way actually, because I posted on Twitter Wednesday night, it was one of those weeks where I had a ton of books and there was a lot of quality, and it made this pick really, really difficult. I was texting with Connor, as he's off to do, to ask me, what is it going to be? And I was, mulling over my choices. And it's kind of like an inside joke here at the iFanboy offices about how Josh seems to, just be obsessed with not picking the obvious pick, be it Flash Rebirth or Blackest Night or anything like that.
He did pick Flash Rebirth.
Did pick Flash Rebirth though, right? Yeah, exactly. But, so we're talking about the whole, do you pick the book that's super, super hyped, or do you pick the book? There's a lot that goes into it. But at the end of the day, when I got through the rest of my stack, Blackest Night number 5 stood out to me as the one that was the most enjoyable for me. And I do need to do a disclaimer. I am wearing my Red Lantern t-shirt, and I do have two hands full of rings. So I might be a little biased. Although, let me make a plea. I didn't get the Indigo ring. So if anybody in the iFan base has an Indigo ring that they would like to send to me, I would gladly take it. But I have every other ring. So
what happened with that one?
It was when I was in New York, so I missed that week. So I was able to get the orange ring from that week, but I didn't get the Indigo. But I'm currently wearing red, orange, green, pink, yellow, blue, and black in my Red Lantern t-shirt. So
I just have black, red, green, and blue.
Yeah. So I feel like Hal on the cover of that of Emerald Dawn. You know, the weird. Yeah.
Don't kill us.
I won't kill you. Anyway, so I'm a little bit of a I'm a little bit of a Green Lantern fan these days, and also as evidenced by this is the back to back weeks for Geoff Johns getting the pick of the week at Flash Rebirth previously last week, Flash Rebirth number 5, and actually in counterpoint at the week before that was BPRD number 5, so it's been 3 weeks in a row of number 5 issues getting the pick of the week,
which is bizarre. Was it last year when Geoff Johns had three in a row, or was it this year?
I don't. You're the stats guy. I have no idea.
Or it was the month of Geoff Johns. Remember that? Where he got three pick of weeks in a row. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. If anybody's gonna do it, he can. So.
Yep.
But anyway, so so enough of the pussyfooting around. Why did I pick Black Knight number 5 and not something like Image United number 1, which I also enjoyed, as well as other, you know, or why didn't Blackest Night, at least for me, get picked previously? With these big event books, and this is what Blackest Night is to me, and I mentioned in my review, you know, we talked a lot about how, you know, it's Blackest Night really isn't a Green Lantern book, it's a DCU book, but those lines kind of got blurred this week, you know, in that it was very Green Lantern based, but it was also DCU based. But this is a blockbuster movie. I mean, this is like, I just saw 2012 last weekend. This is a 2012 event. Image United is an event movie comic book as well. And for me, the start of those events isn't normally the exciting point. It's the books. It's the middle events. The turn of the tide issues. And if you ask me, this was the turn of the tide. This was, we've spent the past 2 months now kind of saying, oh, get on with it. Right. And yep. And finally, in page 2 and 3, it got on with it, as we see the representatives for each of the colored lantern corps, you know, raising their rings and raising their lanterns and doing their oath, with the exception of Larfleeze and the Oranges, who just says, eh. But, you know, and so now, you know, the direction that we knew it was all going to go in, you know, it took that turn. Of course, I saw that coming. What I didn't see coming was, and this is where we get the spoiler, towards the end of it, and I feel like, I felt like such an idiot after realizing I didn't see it coming, was, you know, we talked, you know, Geoff Johns talked a lot about interviews, and also in this book they talked about how, you know, the DC universe is filled with people who have come back from the dead, and people who, and by, you know, by the, you know, the rights of the universe, they probably shouldn't be, like, dead is dead, and people have come back, they're back on borrowed time, and that sort of thing. And basically in this issue, Necron, you know, it's decides it's time to pay the pauper, and he resurrects Bruce Wayne, which I'll get to in a moment.
Well, he doesn't.
Hang on. We'll get to that in a moment. He resurrects Batman, and Batman spits out Black Lantern rings, and they go to all the DC heroes who are part of the fight and turns them into Black Lanterns, all the DC heroes who have died. So you've got Superman, you've got Wonder Woman, you've got Kid Flash, you've got Green Arrow, you've got Donna Troy, you've got Superboy, you've got Animal Man. Hal Jordan and Barry Allen.
Harry Potter.
you know, basically it's saying, you know, you guys died, you came back, so now you're Black Lanterns. And so I didn't see that coming a mile away, and I ended with I can't wait to see, you know, the direction it takes now.
I thought this issue was the best one since the first issue. I think first issue bucked your idea of the beginning isn't usually good. I think that was still the best issue of the run.
Okay.
If I had to pick every week of this year, this issue and one would have been picks of the week. I don't think the middle ones would have been worthy of it.
Yeah, agreed.
I think this issue did a lot of things really, really well. One of which is a minor thing, was it made the new Wally West costume work for me.
Yep.
Whereas it didn't really work for me in last week's Flash Rebirth, this one I thought it looked really cool. The ending that you talked about just a second ago, when I finished the book, I went, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, this was one of the few times I read a comic and thought, wow, I don't know how they're going to get out of this.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know what they're going to do now. Yeah. Like, Superman's a Black Lantern. They're kind of in trouble. And then, it as you said, it played with the idea that everyone has died, and Necron said, you've only come back because I've let you come back. And it's John's sort of fixing the idea that this is why people keep coming back and back and back. And it was really... It was a super exciting issue, and it was a lot of fun. And it, you know, Ivan Reis is just incredible. And I thought the best part about it was we've all been talking about how all these corps are going to come together. They're going to form the White Light, and the White Light's going to destroy the Black Lantern.
The White Power.
The White Power is evidence.
Oh no! I can see the rails.
The White Power comes out of the rings, and it doesn't do anything, which it bucked our expectations. So I thought this issue was full of a lot of really great stuff, and I totally applaud this pick.
That's one thing that I really liked about this issue, is because everybody's like, okay, well, when's the White Lantern coming? And when, you know, when are they all going to combine forces? And that's going to be the end of it. And we're just at the midpoint. We're not even at the last two issues at all. And they've said like, oh, this is like a Saturday morning cartoon, and it doesn't work. So there's more, you know, it's not as predictable as some people might have thought.
Yeah, and this is definitely, when we talked about Black as Night in previous podcasts, we talked about the act structure and stuff like that. And I get to feel like this is definitely the end of Act 2, beginning of Act 3. And now this is the conflict, and we're going to get to the resolution. And like, and over the next, you know, the three issues of this series, as well as the next, what, 130 books that are going to come out between now and the 8th issue that are Blackest Night tie-ins. We'll get an idea of how they do that. But I mean, I loved just the idea of all the colored lanterns together, even though it didn't work.
No, it was very cool, though.
Yeah. Oh, it just was so cool. Although I do take Star Sapphire is the only one that doesn't buy. And I'm a late Green Lantern fan. I got into Green Lantern in the late 90s with He Who Will Not Be Named. And then, of course, with Rebirth and stuff like that. So I don't know the whole history of Carol Ferris and becoming Star Sapphire, but I don't really buy her as Star Sapphire.
She's been it for decades.
Yeah, I know.
It's weird, but yeah.
Yeah, but
it makes her unique amongst all those Silver Age wives/girlfriends.
Yeah, it really does. Really, really does.
She has a super, you know, secret identity.
So I did mention in my review that I do enjoy this because I'm a casual DC fan, in that I ask Connor who's that, or you know, I shoot an email to Tom Cater is going, can you explain this or whatever, but I don't know it as well as I know, you know, Marvel and specifically X-Men history. But I'm feeling that if I was a huge DC guy, the whole Batman thing would have drove me crazy.
Not
absolutely
at all.
Crazy. How is he? I think so. He's not dead. He's not in the past.
He wasn't really. He wasn't
Explain
resurrected.
That. Like the, Explain that, motherfucker.
He wasn't resurrected like the other lanterns were. He was a construct of the Black Ring. The ring formed him. A body didn't rise out of the grave. If you saw, the ring created him out of this black goo.
Out of his skull.
Right, but the body was created out of black goo. It wasn't. It wasn't a body that was resurrected out of the ground.
I see, but is that
and
his
there
skull?
Is and there is a body that's never not been. I mean, it was
yeah,
in
there was
place.
A body.
Just
yeah.
kind of carried the body
it's
out
a cover.
Of
cover. Yeah.
Batman's just the whole Bruce Wayne.
And he wasn't.
Is
and he
messy.
Didn't talk. He wasn't. Yeah. He was just. He was a force to either distract or connect with the other superheroes.
Yeah.
And as soon as he did that, he disappeared. It wasn't like he was really a resurrected body.
Yeah.
But even if he was, there is a body to resurrect.
Right.
His soul was sent to the past in a different body, but this is not it's not like it can't be resurrected.
You
know, when I finished the issue, I was like, well, why do they even have to do that? Because it's, you know, it's not really Batman, and like they, you know, send him back to the grave right afterwards. But I was like, that's kind of the ultimate, you know, F you to all the heroes, though.
Yeah.
Because like, you use one of your friends to do it.
Not only one of your friends, but him. Of all,
yeah, exactly. So,
and he appeared. The action stopped. They all went, "Whoa!" And then that's when they got. That's when they were taken over. So,
yeah,
it worked from a shock value standpoint.
Oh, it definitely was shocking. So, yeah. But
and that great 2-page shot of him when he first appears.
Yeah,
the side face panel was fantastic.
Yeah.
So, Ivan Reese is
My God, Ivan Reese! Like that, and that, I also mentioned that in my review is like, remember when Sinestro Corps came out? We're like, who's the guy who's drawing with VanSciver? He's pretty good, and then it just has grown into this. Like, he's a force. He's a superstar now, so.
And he's doing a much darker, shadow-heavy sort of horror style. I mean, he's usually it's the same style, but it's darker. He's usually a little bit cleaner. It's not as shadowy. This is a very dark book.
Yeah.
It's a horror story.
Yeah.
Really?
So probably should mention Green Lantern number 48. Unfortunately, I know a lot of folks out there probably had their reading order kind of screwed up because the events of Green Lantern 48 should have been read before Blackest Night number 5, even though the editorial note said takes place before Blackest Night number 6. Mm-hmm. But that's just a mistake.
I think that's why Geoff Johns tweeted out that you should read this first.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're not on Twitter, how would you
know? Yeah. I know.
Exactly.
I don't. It's, you know, it is what it is. I, as a general rule, I always read the main book last.
Yeah,
I always
read
the tie-ins first.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I read Green Lantern first. But this is good. This is more of the lanterns getting together. This is basically them, you know, finally, you know, recruiting Larflees and getting, you know, kind of getting the colored band together. You know, I think that Monkey is slipping a little on the art, I think, with the schedule. I think there were a couple of panels and a couple of pages that were a little rough, but then there were a couple of pages that were just awesome. Like,
I don't enjoy Green Lantern as much as the main book. I think it's a solid book, but I think you can definitely do without it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just, that's as much fun as the Blackest Night book.
This was the first time that I've enjoyed Larfleeze from a dialogue standpoint. Like, he's been annoying as hell up to this point, which he's not supposed to. But in this issue, for some reason, it really made me, you know, like, it really made me laugh. Like, it was
funnier in this issue than
So, but Green Lantern, good times.
And I don't know. I really like Reese on Blackest Night, but I think in terms, like, subjectively, I just prefer Monkey's art.
Really?
But I do agree that there's a couple panels that were a little rushed, and you know, but I really like his style. It's very interesting, very expressive, and it's really clean too. I prefer a cleaner line.
Yeah.
Especially when you think about how we were talking about how, you know, a little darker and everything is.
I think Monkey started off really, really strong, and like we saw with the last Green Lantern issue and with a couple panels in this issue, I just think that the whatever breakneck schedule they're on, a couple of pages suffer for it. You know, there's every now and then there's a facial expression that's like, oh, and you know, or an angle or something, you know. But that said, the 2-page spread of Atrocitus attacking Sinestro saying it was me, it was just awesome. You know.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. I don't know, but I really like Monkey's growing into one of my favorite artists these days, and I really liked him on the Black Adam mini and everything like that. But and another one of my favorite moments from this issue is having a softer, quieter, emotional moment with Atrocitus. Yeah. And in terms of design, that's really hard because he's all fangs. Yeah. So it was just a little bit funny he always looks angry.
Right.
So then it's a little bit wonky, but
when Saint Walker, you know, touches the compassion inside of him, and we see like the kind of scenario if he were to become a Blue Lantern. I totally agree. I was like that because he doesn't look blue at all, but it totally worked. You know. So, cool. All right. So that was this week in Blackest Night. So the other big event over, like I mentioned earlier, was Image United number one, which, you know, like I said, you know, earlier, is an event book in and of its own right. And the thing is that it's really easy to target this book and make fun of it. I mean, it's right. And I've read some of the reviews this week of it and stuff like that, what people, you know, expect of it. And for those who don't know, you know, it's written by Kirkman, and this is the artistic jam piece where all the Image founding artists, Eric Larson, Rob Liefeld, Todd McFarlane, Will Portacio, Mark Silvestri, and Jim Valentino, not Jim Lee, all jamming on. What they did was they mailed around the pages to each other and drew in their characters. Now, the thing is that if you're an old school Image fan, this is a dream for you. If you are a casual comics fan and you're aware of Image, you're aware of the characters, I could see why this has no emotional connection whatsoever.
Or if you're a new comics fan, you didn't live through the 90s, you didn't live through all that, and you're just you read Walking Dead and you read Invincible and you read the stuff that and Chew and stuff that Image does now, then this would hold no appeal for you whatsoever.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's me. So
yeah,
and
cool. I was right there when Image got started, and I read all these. You know, I have the first issues of Youngblood, the first issues of Spawn, the first issues of Savage Dragon. I still read Savage Dragon. So I mean personally, I loved it. I mean it was everything I expected and wanted out of it. Was that it was, you know, chaotic and it was lots of fights. And it's not, you know, like a lot of people who look at Robert Kirkman and whether you read Walking Dead or, you know, or Invincible or whatever, you know, this is, you know, him writing other people's characters into a big, like I said, 2012 like event movie, you know, so it's not going to be the most deepest writing you've ever read, you know. What I thought was most interesting was how the artists came together and how I didn't know what to expect with that. And for me, it worked. I mean, it was almost seamless. It was almost kind of weird, in that because they all were drawing their own characters, and you could tell. But it looks like they all fit. The one overarching thing, which I found really interesting, I don't know if it's because of the coloring, although it's not one of his colorists, but it feels like a Liefeld book.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
A lot of backgrounds.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I went to this with super low expectations.
Yeah.
When they announced it. When they announced that San Diego, was it two San Diegos ago?
Two San Diegos ago, yeah.
You know, the big joke was that it was never going to come out, which it still might not ever finish. but I was interested to see how they were going to pull it off. And I low expectations. And I actually, when I finished it, I thought, well, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I actually kind of had fun reading that.
Yeah.
And I, along with Ron, I was there from the beginning of Image. I have all the issues that Ron has. So there's a certain amount of nostalgia factor involved in reading this. And I think there's also the idea that they pulled it off in terms of the artistic works. There was maybe one or two bad pages.
Yeah.
There was one really bad page towards the end that
was spawn page.
The dragon page.
Oh, which one? Oh, at the end.
Yeah, that was a horrible page. Yeah. But for the rest of it, it worked out pretty well, and I like to see McFarlane drawing again. That was nice.
Yeah.
All these guys seem to fit together. Their styles are somewhat similar.
Yep.
And it was a big dumb action movie, and it worked. I actually enjoyed it. And by the end of it, I wondered what was going to happen next, and I didn't expect to want to buy issue 2 when and if it ever comes out, but now I probably will because it was fun.
Yeah.
That's really what you're going to expect from this project. You're not going to expect anything groundbreaking or revolutionary. You're just going to expect to have a good time with these people who used to make comics that were made when you were a kid. That's what it is.
And that's like, what I found really interesting was the things that kind of triggered in me was that I thought that Kirkman, writing wise, he wrote Savage Dragon the best out of all the characters. I thought that was the one I really felt as if he had a strong handle on.
Yeah, he was good with Savage Dragon.
Yeah, and art wise, I was surprised to see how much I enjoyed Silvestri's art. I've always liked Silvestri going back to Wolverine, and I really liked Cyberforce for a while. And for whatever reason, like once they went in the whole, you know, the other direction that they went in, and he stopped drawing and stuff like that. But there's that one page of Cyberforce in their headquarters where I was like, oh, cool. You know,
the guy laughed at that page, how bad it was.
Really?
They're all having a conversation. None of them are looking at each other. They're all posed right at us. Like standing in a lineup, and it was just laughably bad. I mean, he can draw, the characters, but
yeah, terms
of construction and storytelling, it was horrible.
Yeah, well, to each own. And I also forget how, of all the Liefeld characters, Die Hard is my favorite. I don't know why. I just like that design, the character design.
Who was the guy? The only one I didn't know was the guy who had the vision. Who was that guy?
The guy who had the vision? What do you mean?
The guy who had the vision of the upcoming events. And
that's Fortress. That's Portacio's new character.
Oh,
he's the speedster. He's the new one, Fortress. So
yeah, I had no idea who that was.
He's being introduced in this book. So
I see.
Yeah,
it wasn't an hindrance. I was just trying to figure out somebody I was supposed to remember from 15 years ago or not.
And I got the Jim Lee variant cover.
All right.
So
did you guys?
I think it was less in that he wasn't in this book. I forgot.
Yeah, he totally was. Yeah.
I think it sort of takes away from the idea that it's the Image Founders when your biggest founder is not in the book.
Agreed. Totally agreed.
Did you guys see the video posted to Twitter? I think the official Image Twitter account posted it. It was a video of, I think it's the Liefeld kids, his two sons, reading the book. And I was like, that's really cool to see, you know, kids reading comics. And they were like all really excited about it, like flipping pages, like, oh, this is my favorite page. No. Well, this is my second and my third favorite page, but I like this one and I like it because of this. And I'm glad that, you know, like, people are really digging it, so I mean, it's definitely not for me, but it's cool that it's out there, and I can totally imagine being really, really excited from a nostalgia standpoint on seeing these characters together again. And it's kind of a cool idea for a project to have all the artists working together, and just imagine the
mailing. To me, it's less the characters than the artists.
Yeah, it's more the artists. Yeah,
more the artists. Okay.
Of all the creators' kids to be enthusiastic, I would imagine Liefeld's kids to have gotten that enthusiastic gene, because that dude is enthusiastic as hell. Yeah. it's kind of infectious, you know. Like, say what you will about his art and stuff like that. Like, just
he still loves comics.
Yeah, and loves what he does, and you know, so.
Yeah, and I mean, you see people like complaining about and nitpicking things about comics all the time and stuff, and to see kids like really genuinely enthusiastic about stuff, and it's just really cool to see. So.
Yeah. No, I'm excited for it. It should be. I mean, I think, like I said, it's an event, and whether it's late or not, whether it goes off like they plan, I've heard rumblings of what they're going to do in the future issues, and it's just, for the Image fan, it's going to be pretty cool. So,
how long is it?
8 issues, I think, or 7 or 6. I don't know. I forget. Wow. One of six. I'm sorry. I keep getting it confused with Blackest Night. So it's 6 issues. So
okay.
Cool. So surprisingly, Uncanny X-Men number 517 was. Just so close to being the pick of the week. Mainly because it was a badass fight issue with some great Cyclops leadership, great character moments of all the team members, as their island gets attacked by five Predator X's. I actually liked what Fraction has done with, you know, he's delivered, you know, Magneto now to the X-Men, and he's got Namor, and a big fight's coming, and Cyclops goes, okay, we got two big guns, and in no time they're nullified. They're not a factor anymore. which I thought was a clever use of the characters. The only thing that killed it for me was I just can't stand Greg Land. I just can't. The art was just painful at times, ridiculously painful. But this was fun X-Men team, you know, fighting, which is what you know what I grew up loving. So Fraction wrote it really well. It just looked like shit. So yep. What can you do?
Well, Powers number one came out this week. The third volume of Powers, I believe, at this point.
Let's see what it says in the indie shit. Volume three. Volume three.
First volume was Image. Second volume was Max. And now we're back at Max and
Icon.
Sorry. Yeah. They're interchangeable. It's funny because the last issue of Powers we saw was, I think Ron and I agree, probably a great ending to the series.
Yep.
I thought it was a perfect way to end the series. It didn't need any more Powers, even though I love Powers, and Powers has been one of my favorite books since its entire run. That was my thought going into it, and even the first maybe 10 pages. But then by the end of it, I was really into the story and really into this, and really happy it was back. So yeah. It turned me around, even though Joss Whedon was in the issue.
I heard about that. How was he in the issue?
He was a murderer. But...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not the first time.
He was a cameo. They're always throwing cameos in this book.
Yeah.
Okay. But the one in Criminal back a few weeks ago, or the previous issue of Criminal, there was, what's his face? Stephen King's son.
They do that a lot. They throw their buddies into these books all the time, and it was
Joe Hill.
But I was glad to have it back too. I mean, it looked beautiful. What I just don't understand, and maybe I'm an idiot, maybe I don't get it, is that it says on the cover, all new story, new format. How's the format different?
You tell me. I don't know.
I have no idea. I don't know how the format is different. I know.
Is it longer? Are they sticking to that longer thing where the 40 pages is considered the new format?
I guess maybe. I mean, and Bendis was on Twitter saying, "Oh, I love this new format." Like, what new format?
I think they're still considering the 40 pages to be the new format, which was the new format in the last book.
That's fine. That's cool. And it ends with a swastika, so that's always good.
I think as soon as it sucked me right in, and I was really thinking, man, I don't need any more powers. Then by the end of it, I was like, wow, I can't wait for more powers. So it's good. It was a mystery. There's a murder. There's a flashback to the old.
The flashback to the early 60s grouping. I mean, you know, especially coming off of Mad Men and stuff like that. Like when I saw Zora.
Yeah.
That scene when she came in and she's got her little boxes around her, but she's got that, 1960s kind of fashion jacket on. I was like, oh, this is cool. Yeah. This was one of the, when Powers first came out 10 years ago, all three of us were like, hey, this is something special, and this continues to be something special. So I'm glad. Now let's just hope they can keep it on a regular schedule. Yeah,
that was always the biggest failing once it went to Marvel.
Yeah, exactly.
Or once Bendis went to Marvel, anyway. It was a great book. I know you're all excited to know what's going on with Archie.
I've been on the edge of my seat.
Well, we're going to give a little bit of a shorter Archie report just because we've got so many books to talk about this week. But Archie 603 came out. This is the issue where, if you recall, at last time, Archie got married. He married Veronica. They had twins. But he felt restless. He felt unsettled. Something wasn't right. So he went back out into the snow, and he walked down memory lane as opposed to up memory lane.
Okay.
And now he walked – there was a fork in the road of memory lane, and he switched forks.
Okay.
Now he appears back in college. Which I think we all would like to be able to walk down that fork.
I know you would.
And he suddenly it's college graduation again, and he has to run and graduate. And this time, he thinks maybe Betty's the one. Yeah. So he's having a little trouble. He's asking for advice from Reggie and Moose and all those people. And Reggie just wants Veronica. He just wants whatever choice Archie makes that allow him to get to Veronica. So. Archie decides he proposes to Betty, and of course Veronica is crushed, which means Reggie's going to swoop right in on the emotionally vulnerable Veronica like the possible date rapist he is.
Is he using the dentist plan?
It's like, hey, let me wipe those tears away. And so then this issue's the second half of this issue is all about Archie and Betty planning their wedding, and it's a total opposite of the Betty to Archie Veronica wedding, and that it's going to be small. They're going to do it at Pop Tate's. It's going to be not ostentatious, and whereas Veronica's was the huge affair with the
this is how it should be really
punches of guests and everything. And
this one feels right. I got a good
this
feel
one feels right. Right. And plus, there's a lot more of that awkward real world stuff where like. Like Reggie and Jughead can't find jobs, and it's just like it's the bizarre thing about the story is they're trying to make it more relevant, I think, but it doesn't fit in this world. It's this idealic Archie world where like no one can find work and the economy's bad, and It's just bizarre, but
where memory lane is not a one-way street. Yeah.
It's got forks.
It's got forks.
You'd think in a world that magical, you know, they wouldn't be in a recession, but there is. And this one had a little less. This one they sort of crammed in two of the Veronica stories into the one Betty story. Like Veronica, two issues to sort of play this all out, whereas this has got one. I think I don't know, the pacing was off, but it's. I think next issue is going to be the big one where they have the marriage, and then there's going to be another. He's going to populate the earth with more little Archies.
Excellent.
It's just been bizarre, but this one did feel right, and it does feel the girl next door wins.
Yeah.
And her butler's all happy that Archie won't be coming around anymore to break stuff because he's very clumsy. If you know anything, Archie, you know he's clumsy. And stuff.
This Week in Archie, brought to you by Connor. Thank you.
Although the next issue's not out until January, which I don't understand.
Oh, God. Another skip week or a skip month, really?
Maybe it's supposed to come out that week or Diamond's not shipping any comics.
You got to keep the momentum here, Archie. You know, like, come on.
Yep.
So,
Beth Cooper. Betty Cooper.
So a lot of people were talking about Superman Secret Origin number 3, and Paul, I believe you were raving about it on the Twitter.
Yeah. I think this is my pick of the week. This is maybe my favorite issue of the mini so far.
It's the best one.
Yeah. I just it's more of the John's Donner world of Superman, and it's like if you love the Superman movie, like you're gonna love this, especially.
Oh, he puts the Superman movie square in the middle of.
Yeah,
the
I mean, again, yeah. Basically, I mean, like, and I'll be I, like, I really liked it. I really, really liked this issue. I thought it was great, and it gave me a big smile on my face. Kind of freaked me out that he's drawing him this as Christopher Reeve. Like,
yeah, that's my favorite part of it.
Freaks me out. But then, so much of the events are pulled from the movie. And again, like what I was saying with the last issue with the Smallville elements is that what I think Johns is taking is he's taking the best parts of what is in the Superman mythos over the last 30 years and putting them into the series, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think is a great idea, you know? So when people think of Superman, they think of Superman the motion picture, they think of the helicopter scene, boom, it's in here. You know, it's not exactly, you know, and it's, you know, and the I think the Luthor stuff is the stuff that's probably, and I said Luthor like Otis.
Otisburg.
Otisburg.
Otisburg. I'm going to watch that after this is over.
This scene is so good. Mr. Luthor. I think the Luthor stuff is the stuff where he's really being original, and that's how he's making it, you know, kind of his own.
Actually, the element that was the most original, the one I liked the best was that Clark arrives in Metropolis. That story begins where he's a young reporter just arriving in Metropolis, and Metropolis is kind of a hellhole, like Gotham.
Yeah, it's Gotham.
That's a totally new element to it. Normally, it's this gleaming city on the hill, and Superman fits right into that mold. But here, he's going to show that Superman changes the entire city. And so he gets there, it's gringy. Yeah. The Daily Planet's falling on hard times. The sign's all broken. They can't afford to spin the globe. You know,
the Daily Planet's going under. Yeah, totally.
You're gonna see that Superman's gonna change the entire city, and not just, you know. I think that's a really nice element to it.
Yeah,
it's like remember back when the newspaper industry was hitting hard times, like back then. So it's like Clark gets it back together, and hopefully in the DC world, newspapers are doing just swell.
Yeah.
So that's good.
I liked how Lois totally tore apart Clark. Like she saw right through him. You know, where she's like, it's all an act, right? The bad suit, the slouching, the glasses overtake your face. Like that was, you know, like she might not have figured it out, but she started, you know.
She's a good reporter.
Yeah, exactly.
She should use her eyes. She never really did in the past.
Yeah.
And it's a great, great Lois showcase issue. Like you get why Clark likes her and everything, and why she's a good reporter, because she works at this terrible newspaper, but she's willing to take risks and, you know, hop fences and wear disguises and get in on the story. And I like the Superman issues that are kind of slowdown issues, like just the great character stuff, because there's so much history to these characters, and I don't mind, you know, seeing stuff rehashed, and especially when it's being rehashed so well. So it's just a great, I think he's doing a really good job in this origin series. So looking forward to more.
Plus, there's a little bit of burn in here too. In that, when he saves the day, everybody wants a piece of him, and he flies away to escape to Smallville, and he's all upset about it. And that's from out of the burn Man of Steel miniseries.
So.
Taking a little bit of everything and putting it together, which is what Jeff Johns does.
Well, sure enough, it's going to be. I mean, it's going to be a 6-issue series, and when it's all collected, it's going to be a wonderful, like, kind of, you know, like we said last time we talked about it, it's going to be a Superman primer trade that you can hand to somebody and say, "This is Superman." Mm-hmm. And when that happens, you can go to InStock Trades to pick it up. You go to InStockTrades.com. We want to thank them for sponsoring this episode. They are one of the best spots spots online to order trade paperbacks and collected editions and hardcovers, essentials, omnibuses. They've got everything there. They've got over 9,000 titles in stock. They pack them up. I just recently got my Captain Britain omnibus from them, and it was all packed up nicely. They've got reasonable shipping rates. No matter what, how much you order. So if you go to InStockTrades.com, they've got discounts on all the major publishers. So you definitely don't want to miss it out. InStockTrades.com for all of your trade paperback needs.
Another issue, Detective Comics 859. Another just
beautiful,
amazing, beautifully drawn, constructed issue from J.H. Williams.
To the point where I don't know what else to say. It's. I mean, if this doesn't win an Eisner, I don't know what will.
Yeah.
You know.
Plus, now the story is really, really matching the art, which is I really enjoyed this issue a lot. It was all about. I keep wanting to call her Kathy Kane because that's Batwoman in my head. But Kate Kane's post, in the last issue we saw her childhood. And now this issue is about her being a young adult. She's in West Point. She's in college.
Her and Montoya.
And she meets Montoya. We could see that romance. And it was just beautifully done.
If I had any one mark against it, it's I wish it was all the flashback stuff.
Yeah.
And we weren't getting the modern through.
I got a little disappointed when it moved. Not that the modern stuff isn't beautiful, but when it moved to the modern, I was like, oh, go back to the flashback. it's all got to tie into one another. So
it's like giant chicken people. Can we get back to the weird. So.
Yeah. So Chew number 6 came out. For those of you who might not have been on the Chew bandwagon yet, not only did Chew number 6 come out this past week, but also the Chew trade paperback collecting the first 5 issues. If you haven't started reading Chew yet, read it. That's all I can say.
You have no excuse not to. It's only $9.
$9.99 for 5 issues. This starts the next arc. Tony Chew gets a new partner.
Well, his old partner.
His new partner, but not new to him. But his new partner with a great new spin to him. It gets crazy. Dialogue was fantastic. I mean, it's everything that we've grown to love about Chew just continuing. So.
Oh, this was a great issue. I read it first at a diner, actually. I have some of the comics. That is ironic.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I really liked it. Die Hard Year One, number 3. We've talked about Die Hard, the first issue. Josh and I have been loving this. Howard Chaykin's gritty 70s New York, which is really authentic. But the reason why this is notable is that there's been a murder plot. There's been a mystery going around that John McClane's been sort of on the edges of. He's sort of been wandering in and out of it. He hasn't really connected to the main plot yet. But in this issue, we've had the Die Hard scenario happen now. He's on a boat. He's working security. After hours, he's a cop, so he's a young rookie cop, so he's working security to he's not to make some extra money, but he's been asked to moonlight as security for this boat, and then the bad guys in the story have taken over the boat. So now we have the Die Hard scenario, and I giggled because I love the Die Hard scenario. One man against a group of thugs in a confined space.
Yeah.
Now we're in. So if you like Die Hard, there's no reason not to read this book. It totally captures the feel of the characters and the story. If you were around in the 70s in New York, it wasn't as fun as it is now.
Cool. Guardians of the Galaxy number 20. I can't praise M. Night Lanning enough, but there was one page in here that sums up why I love this book. The Guardians are all chilling in the bar, the nowhere, in the celestial head where their base is, and Groot is behind them and has a gigantic glass with a gigantic cocktail umbrella in it. And then at the bottom of the page, they're talking about the situation they're in, and Jack Flagg, the red, white, and blue haired guy who's joined the team, he just kind of shrugs and goes, "That's why I hate this cosmic stuff." So like they're aware of what they're doing, and it's just like it's the book is so great on so many levels. And
isn't Groot a tree?
Yeah, well, he's a tree creature, he's a being.
It's like tree beard.
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah, but the fact that he has a huge glass. I mean, it's like a 7-foot glass.
Well, in the cosmic world, you got to be prepared for any kind of species.
Exactly, and the huge cocktail umbrella.
Where do you get those from?
Real quickly, also, I want to praise Boom Studios for what they've been doing again with the Disney books. I picked up Uncle Scrooge number 385, and I, as a kid, I read the Uncle Scrooge books in those little collections, and this totally feels like it. And it's got all it's got the number one dime, and it's got Gizmo, and it's got the Donald and the nephews, and it reading it was just so much fun.
I don't know how people realize how close they were to having this be pick of the week.
Yeah, it was actually really close.
Two really good comics.
I think I was going to go on vacation for the week if that had happened. I'm just going to walk away from the website. I'll come back for the next one.
So I just love the Uncle Scrooge books from Boom. So if you have kids in your life, definitely pick them up. And finally, I want to touch upon Justice League Cry for Justice number 5 of 7, the mini James Robinson's miniseries, the much aligned miniseries, where I think Connor summed it up where this would be a great Elseworlds tale. Except for the fact that it's not an Elseworlds tale, and Roy Harper had his arm chopped off.
Well, I'm just gonna get reattached.
You think so?
Yeah. Superheroes. They can do anything. For me, I think I realize with this issue the biggest problem is the art.
Yes.
Which I think I would like on a different project. I think it's just totally wrong for this project. I really like the story a lot now that we're really into it. I like what's going on. I just think the art is totally hurting the story.
It's that painterly style, right?
It's painterly and everybody's really stiff and there's no real flow to it. And it looks nice and I think it would work in a different context, but here it just doesn't fit what's going on. Mm. Otherwise, I like the story of James Robinson's story. I like this one. I actually liked Justice League, the issue that came out this week too. It was really good.
Yeah, I feel as if Robinson's getting a lot of shit for this. I think it's mainly from the art. I do agree the story is good, and I'm curious to see what's going to happen now, Roy, and all that sort of stuff. And I did like the Justice League Blackest Night. I thought the vibe returned, which was fun.
Vibe was awesome.
Yeah, vibe was awesome. So,
and now for a quick word from our sponsor, Funimation. Imagine having Dr. Frankenstein as your father. Your classmate and fellow pilot is a partial clone of your dead mother. And she's hot. You've been forced by your father to pilot a giant living robot named Ava Unit 1 to fight deadly creatures called angels from destroying the planet. And to top it off, you have raging teenage hormones, and it's the end of the world if you screw up. No pressure. Evangelion 1.01, You Are Not Alone, is the complete rebuild of the groundbreaking sci-fi giant robot anime. Otaku USA magazine writes that Evangelion reminds us of what anime can be by having us flex all our otaku muscles, yet always satisfies our basest needs for cute girls and mecha. Watch the first 8 minutes of the movie at www.funimation.com/Evangelion. Evangelion 1.01, You Are Not Alone. Available now on DVD.
Anyway, so it is Thanksgiving week, and we are thankful for the iFanboy user community who are writing some great reviews on the site. Wanted to highlight a bunch of them. First off, we want to highlight Akamu reviewed The Goon number 33 and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. At the time of this recording, 1.1% of you made it your pick of the week. And Akamu says that this comic is brilliant. It works whether you've read any of the previous Goon issues or not. It's just a fantastic bit of dark humor, storytelling with beautiful artwork. So, good times with the Goon.
The Red Goon.
Neither have I, but this is a silent issue, and I've heard good things about it. And I want to read Goon because I love Eric Powell's art. I just haven't jumped on. So, yeah.
For whatever reason, I don't know. I had a Goon trade for about a year, and I finally gave it to Paul.
Yeah.
I still haven't decided to read this.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. So the next one is Dorian P. He reviewed Thor, Giant Size. I think it was... They had like four names. We'll just call the Giant Size Finale number one.
Yeah.
You give the story a 2 out of 5, the art a 4 out of 5, and the community pick of the week percentage was 0.46%. And this was the J. Michael Straczynski's finale. And what Dorian P. says is, just finished reading my copy, and to be quite honest, this was not worth the wait. There were a few good moments with Bill and Volstagg, but this should have been a double-sized issue, not a 22-page story with a preview for the next writer's arc and a reprint to pad the book up to $3.99. This was not the epic finale to JMS's run we've been waiting for all this time.
Yeah, I don't know.
Shocking that it wasn't worth the wait.
Yeah, just shocking indeed. I don't know. I don't read Thor, and I'm not a big fan of JMS, but I saw it at the store and I flipped through it and it looked kind of light, you know, and I've heard this, you know, get a lot of hype as the last issue. I would just feel bad if I was a Thor fan. So, yeah.
Well, the thing is, this wasn't going to wrap anything up. That was the entire point of him leaving.
Yeah.
It was going in a different direction he didn't want to be involved in, so of course it wasn't going to end the story because the story can't end. It's got to go to this new place.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, I think it reads better in trade, so I obviously haven't gotten to this finale yet, but I kind of enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed it more than you guys have, and certainly Josh, but
yeah.
All right. Maybe it reads better.
Josh didn't dislike it. I feel like I need to defend
him. I know.
Don't defend him. He's not here. Let us malign his character.
Didn't like it. That's different.
Okay, and then Jumping Jupiter gave Invincible Iron Man number 20, story of 5 out of 5, and the art of 5 out of 5, so he liked it. And the power percentage, as of this recording, 4.6%. Usually I'd write a lengthier review, but this issue punched me in the gut, so I'm kind of discombobulated. First Fraction gets semi-Gmo on our ass, meaning Grant Morrison, on our ass by opening the book in Tony's subconscious, or in a dream, Purgatory, and then Tony's speech, which pans out and is revealed to be in Rescue's Repulsor, a.k.a. Pepper's heart, and she breaks down. Why does he get to come back and not others? She loves Tony and resents herself for having a second chance with him. I damn near cried, seriously. The rest of the book is a blur, despite having read it several times. It's too emotionally resonant to sink in right now. There's something in my eye.
Wow, an emotional Iron Man issue. I thought one of the notable things about this was the cover. This is the first
cover
with I forget the name of the guy who's doing it. I think it's Ryan something. I forget. But very kind of graphic design-y kind of cover and very cool.
Oh, yeah. Those are cool.
Very, very cool. Although I did have to laugh. I was talking to my friend about it, and it's like yeah, it's cool, but, you know, I read books and magazines, and that design's kind of been there for years. So, like, it's nice that, you know, the comics are catching up with kind of, you know, modern design.
The graphic design in comics is so 40 years ago that anything very nearly modern stands out.
So go to ifanboy.com/comics where you can rate and review and do your pull list and might get a review read on the podcast. And we thank everybody who's written reviews.
Yes. This episode of the iFanboy Pick a Leak podcast is brought to you in part by Drawer Boxes and Collection Drawer.com. Drawer boxes are the strongest storage container made for comics. They can be stacked up to 6 high to maximize the square footage. And because they work like a drawer, every comic in your collection remains accessible by simply pulling a drawer open. Long and short, drawer boxes can be combined and linked together with box locks, box anchors, and any configuration to fit any space and remain secure with absolutely no tipping or slippage. And now the contents can be organized and sorted to meet the needs of any collector with every issue immediately accessible. For a number of years, collectors have complained about their comics sliding around and falling over when a long or short box is partially filled. This is true. Sometimes causing bent issues and small cracks in the spine. Box sort upright, but dividers actually hold comics upright in the box and keep them from sliding around no matter how few comics are in it, eliminating damage. And as the drawer fills, the divider can be adjusted to move back and forth, accommodating any quantity. Drawer boxes, box sort, upright dividers, and box locks, box anchors are exclusive trademarks of the Collection Drawer Company and are available at collectiondrawer.com. Make sure you mention iFanboy when ordering, and I just ordered a box myself. I ordered 5 of them.
Wow.
I'm gonna give them a try.
Cool.
They sound
cool. I hate
cool.
slippage.
You know why? It's because I went to the storage unit to get some issues out for the upcoming video show, and I spent literally 10 minutes lifting and trying to find the box I was looking for and going to the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, I got 3 levels of box of books going, and I went home and I ordered them right. I was like, screw this.
Nice.
I want to be able to open them up.
I'm like the angry order. So.
Yeah.
All right. So on to the emails. Our first email comes from Nick from Carolina PR, which is Puerto Rico, maybe? Anyway.
That's what I thought. I don't know.
Yep. So Nick from Carolina PR says, if you could have any comic book character as a helium balloon appear in the Thanksgiving Day parade, which would it be? Would one of you be the balloon handlers? And I thought that was a holiday themed question. So, what character would you like to see in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade as a balloon? For those who might not know, Spider-Man has had a balloon over the years. Underdog and some other characters.
It was Superman balloon when we were kids.
Yeah, Superman. Yep. So Paul, what balloon would you like to see?
Well, when I read this question, I was like, well, so there's Spider-Man. Spider-Man doesn't even fly, so I don't understand why.
But he's kind of crawling. So, he's like the balloon.
He's crawling along.
Crawling
on
the air. That's right. Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. I was thinking like Superman would be cool because Superman actually flies. It would be cool to see. I think Hellboy would be fun. You got to think of the ones that would look good, like distorted, like
visually,
like super deformed, like and you think of like the Mighty Mugs, like Hulk looks really cool in that sense. So I don't know, and that'd be colorful. So
Connor,
Witchblade.
Really?
Witchblade.
That's a great idea.
Phantom Lady.
I would like to see a Space Ghost balloon. I think that'd be a good balloon.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think Superman's a natural.
Yeah.
Natural
would you want to see a Batman balloon or no?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. I want another float. Like we posted on fanboy.com the 1980s Marvel float. Let's do another float. That was awesome. So, because you know RoboCop's awesome.
Well, there was a Marvel RoboCop.
Yeah, I know.
Book still. in the late 80s, but I remember seeing that float when I was a kid. I got photos of it from taking it at the parade, and I think my friends and I nearly lost it because we didn't expect it. Suddenly there was all these Marvel characters jumping around, and we nearly passed out, and we never came back.
So
that was the brief foray into, wasn't it, Marvel late 80s, like Marvel Entertainment or something like that?
Yeah, it was right before they went public, I think.
Wasn't
it? Yeah, so
you got a float.
Yeah, exactly. And I would not be a balloon handler because I'd screw it up. So.
I'd actually really like to be. I've heard it's really fun.
Yeah,
to do
it's cold.
Yeah, it does get cold. Yeah,
not I'd want to watch it on TV.
It's 50-something degrees this year, but I've heard doing that's a really good time. And you go to like a class, and they teach you how to do all that stuff.
Well, hold a string.
Kind of cool. Ooh, classes are fun.
Don't I know people who've done that. You can go to clown college, be a clown in the parade.
All right, our next voicemail comes from Tom, who is Harlequin on iFanboy, and that's with a 1-3 in Harlequin. And Paul's gonna take a stab at this one.
Yeah, Josh isn't here, so and you'll see why that's relevant. Greetings from Britain. I'd first like to say good job on the site and podcast and what have yous. Excellent work as always. My question, which I'm sure you get every year, is to do with comics-related Christmas gifts. I'm eager to get my mum, dad, and brother a trade for Christmas. But of course, I don't know where to start. None of them are even vaguely acquainted with the world of comics. But I would like to get them something which they can read and maybe enjoy and maybe help them understand why I love flimsy little magazines so. My dad is 61 and likes yachts and motorbikes and drinking. My mum is 51, is a glass artist, and likes arty stuff. Neither of them have much spare time on their hands, so an absolute addition is not going to be in the cards. My brother is 27 and works in banking. Boo. He likes football, soccer, and rugby and drinking. Although in rereading this message, it seems like I have offered them to you as blind dates. I only hope that this information helps you to help me. Alternatively, just tell me some nice books that are novice skeptic friendly, or you can just point me to the podcast article Friday question where you have answered this before. Thanks again and great content. Keep up the good work. Take it easy, boys.
Good try, Paul. I think the challenge you and Josh and everybody has is you start the accent strong as maintaining it.
It's maintaining it.
The challenge, yeah.
But in my defense, that's a very long email.
It was a long email, yeah. And I'm a critic. I can't do the accent, so I can criticize other people who do. So anyway, getting lots of questions about making
his dad sounds awesome, by the way.
Yeah,
motorbikes and yachts. I hope all together at the same time.
I want to hang out with his dad. Yeah.
So we get this question a lot. What holiday, you know, I want to buy comics for friends and family. For what should I buy them? We're actually going to be doing iFanboy video show is returning, and we're doing our annual holiday, you know, shopping guide episode. So you're going to want to tune into that. But based off his dad, his mom, and his brother, what would we recommend here?
I always recommend Lost Girls. That's always my go-to gift.
Especially to your mom, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've got three of them already wrapped. My family.
Let's see. His mom's into glass art and likes arty stuff. I'd say Asterios Polyp. Good for any artistically minded person, I think. For anybody,
I was
really
going to say Promethea.
Prometheus.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. But Asterios Polyp could be good. Something his dad yachts, motorbikes, and drinking. We say
something adventure-y.
Yeah, I was gonna say the Die Hard, but it's not collected.
Yeah, some sort of globetrotting adventure story.
Drinking and motorbike, like Young Liars.
I think that might be too weird.
It might be too weird.
Yeah, the spiders from space and shit like that.
That's
maybe something like, you know, something you know, like actiony. You know,
Let's see. Tough.
This is hard. Also, the brother who likes banking and football and drinking and rugby. These are all very general interests that don't really apply to them.
You know what? Okay, so this is what we're going to do. So
Queen of Country for the dad.
Oh, Queen of Country, yes, yeah. So, Tom, what you got to do is you got to let us know what kind of movies do they like. That's always my trigger is what kind of movies or books do they watch or read, and that's a good way to get to a good recommendation. So
yeah. The media they like, that's although the mom's art thing that was more relevant than the drinking. Yeah.
But there's no comics about yachts, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
So. Well, there's going to be action on yachts at some point.
Yeah. The Losers, maybe?
The Losers. Yeah, that's a good one. The Losers or Queen of Country for the dad.
Yeah.
And, for the brother, something in the banking industry, something about having money.
Comic Wars? The book about the comic industry? No. I don't know. Anyway, so watch our holiday episode.
And
maybe get some ideas. You'll get some ideas there. All right, so on to the voicemails. Our voicemail comes from another Ron from Michigan. He's got a question about Dark Reign.
Are you from Michigan?
I'm not.
Hey, iFanboys. It's Ron from Fraser, Michigan calling. I was just thinking last podcast a couple ago, you guys talked about how like Norman Osborn was the villain in every single Marvel book, and it got me thinking a little bit about the whole Dark Reign storyline that they're doing and how it's not very cohesive. Like, for instance, Ronan got arrested like a month and a half ago, and he's still in New Avengers today, just, you know, doing whatever he does. But the stories have been really good, even though there's no real continuity that's going on. How do you guys feel about this? Do you guys prefer a more Civil War storyline where everything hinges on one book and it's pretty, you know, fluid and what continuity stuff is going on? Or, you know, or do you like something like Dark Reign where they're just putting out good stories because that's what you guys talk about? All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Well, we're only going to have a few minutes to talk about this. We did a whole 30-minute video show on continuity. And we really got to really discuss it there. So if you really want more, go look on the video show for the continuity episode, which is called Continuity, I believe. So right. That was – we did a half an hour.
Yeah.
But now, in the few minutes we have, I definitely, as I get older, more and more, I just care about the good story and less about the continuity. And I know Ron's going to disagree, but it's just never going to fit. It'll never fit with all these books. So you have to really, at some point, just throw the continuity – importance to the side and enjoy the story.
Yeah, that's I agree with you. That's why I do acknowledge that the mature answer is the just give me good stories or whatever, but there's something in me that just I want it all to work and to make sense and it to be tighter, and I love something well executed, something that, you know, is, you know, and it can be done. It still can be done with a little planning and working with the release schedule and coordinating and everything. And I think
it can only be done if they cut the book in half.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing, is that Dark Reign is too big to be controllable. And I think what Marvel's problem, at least, and maybe a little bit to DC as well, is that they get so excited by the ideas that these generate that they just want to do everything. And sometimes you can't do everything. Sometimes I think that less can be more.
No, when it all works out, it's a really satisfying thing for a comic reader. But the fact of the matter is, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to work out. So what are you going to do? Are you going to let affect your enjoyment of the stories?
Right.
And most of the time I see criticisms online, I fanboy saying, this doesn't make sense, doesn't fit. Well, that's going to happen. That's a given.
It's up to you to intellectually make it work, make it fit for you. You know, I mean, like, God forbid I read Green Lantern before Blackest Night this week. In my head, I go, okay, these events happened before that issue. Okay, move on. Like, you can't have everything spelled out for you, you know, so, but...
Make your own continuity, and then you got to decide what you're reading. What are you reading these comics for? Are you reading them for this tapestry that makes total sense, which it never will, or are you reading them to read good stories and enjoy yourself and have a nice time reading comics? That's what you got to figure out.
Exactly. So we got a bunch of great voicemails this week. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. We'll get to some more of them next week. But keep calling in. Leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Tell us your name, where you're from. Try to keep it to 30 seconds. We did get a bunch of great ones this week, and hopefully we'll get some more throughout the rest of the month. So keep calling in.
Yep. And speaking of the rest of the month, December is going to be another big giveaway month for iFanboy. We had one in October where we gave stuff away in every episode of the Pick a Week podcast. And starting next week, which will be the first episode in December, which, even though if you're listening to this in December, it's not a December episode, there'll be a giveaway. There'll be a big one. The first one, I believe, is going to be a very special criminal giveaway. So if you're into criminal, you may want to check it out.
If you've been meaning to get into criminal.
Yes. Yeah. If you're meaning to get into criminal, if you heard about it, you just haven't gotten behind it, this might be the one for you. So if you want to go to fanboy.com to find out the details, you can do that. There'll be a red post right at the top showing the giveaways for the month of December. So go check that out. And if you're not a member, become one, because you have to be a member to be eligible for the iFanboy giveaways.
Yes, and you can become a member by going to ifanboy.com/store, and that's where you can sign up. And we've got a bunch of different levels. For $4 a month or $42 a year, you can sign up and you can get get some stickers and some buttons, some iFanboy buttons, as well as a comic from our collection as a thank you for becoming a member. And if you got a little more money to spend this holiday season, you can spend $10 a month or $100 a year, gets you the stickers, the buttons, the comic, plus a members-only t-shirt. So definitely want to – it could be a good gift for a loved one. If there's a friend of yours who isn't a member yet, sign them up. You know, you can only be – by becoming a member is the only way to win in our giveaways and that sort of thing. Also, in our store, you can find – we've got some great t-shirts. We've got the Power Responsibility t-shirt and the Herm t-shirt. They're selling – the numbers are dwindling. So
there are less than 10 Herm shirts left.
Yes. Yep.
Most of the sizes are sold out. The men's extra large, women's large – men's small, women's extra large. That's the only sizes left. So, yeah.
So get them while you can. And also, you don't want to miss our latest and our newest shirt, which is the first from our line of creator design t-shirts. Mike Norton brings us Battle Pug. So you're going to want to
pick – awesome.
Yeah, you're going to want to pick that up. Sales on that have been going fast and furious, which is going to be a very limited run. So if you want, you just get your pre-order in very quickly. So go to ifanboy.com/store.
We should put that design on the side of our van.
Oh, we're going to. Yeah, the iFanboy van is going to have Battle Pug on the side of it. Yeah, totally. And the T-shirt is it's a classic early 80s metal ringer T-shirt. So it's going to be all. It's going to be badass. So
I don't even like dogs, and I'm excited to wear that T-shirt. Yeah, it's a great T-shirt. All right. If you're at iFanboy.com becoming a member, you should check out what else is going on there, because there's other stuff happening all the time. And you can read Ron's full Pick of the Week review for Blackest Night number 5, as well as all the in-depth comic book discussion. There's discussions on every single book that comes out in the week on the comics page. There's articles by everybody. Paul's got a weekly piece. Every writer, great stuff, all at iFanboy.com, and you can find it all there, as well as iFanboy.com/about, which is where you find all of our social network links to become friends with us on Twitter and Facebook and all those other sites that are increasingly relevant.
And you're gonna want to go to facebook.com/ifanboy and twitter.com/ifanboy. Make sure you're following both of those. Those are great resources for the iFan base.
As well as our Twitter groups, which you can find at twitter.com/ifanboy, where you can follow all the comic creators at all at the same time, all that stuff.
Yeah, totally badass. So a lot of you have been asking when the video show is coming back. And
most people, I would say, go to ifanboy.com.
Yes, that's exactly. And we've got a post there that says, it is returning, oh my God, this week.
Shit.
Did you guys shoot anything?
Shit. So this Wednesday, December 2nd, is the return of the iFanboy video show. And we're going to be talking Captain America, one of our favorite characters from the past 10 years. And there's a lot of Captain America action going on this month in the Marvel Universe, so we thought we'd take a look at it. And Brubaker's great run, as well as some of the classic runs of Captain America. So on Wednesday, you can go to ifanboy.com, check that out, or go to revision3.com/ifanboy.
All right, well, what I'm going to do is I've got a Captain America Mighty mug. I'm going to shoot it with that. We'll be fine.
What are you, Paul?
We'll be fine.
Are you trying to be Paul?
Yes. I'm trying to figure out a way to do this quickly. Damn it. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can leave us a voicemail, 888-FANBOYS-326-2697, with any comments, questions, or concerns, or discussion topics, or anything like, or any tips on how to quickly shoot a video show before Wednesday.
I was going to say that those are doing very well at the film festivals I've submitted them to.
Oh, excellent! Great. Yeah, you're going for the highbrow
rap. The
festival. Going for the Palm d'Or. Yeah. Nice.
Excellent. And so finally,
special mention of the Toronto Film Festival. Exactly. Audience pick.
So finally, if you dig us, go to iTunes, write a review, or tell your friends about it. Also, don't forget to subscribe to iFanboy Don't Miss, which you can find in iTunes. If you just search for iFanboy, you can find it there. Leave a review for that new show as well. That's our quick kind of creator interview show. Last week we talked to Kirkman at Image United, and we're still lining one up for next week. So stay tuned on Monday for at iFanboy.com to see who's going to be on this week. But it's a great place to hear about comics that you should think about buying at your store every Wednesday. So and write reviews for it in iTunes, write reviews for the video show, helps people discover the show, so we really appreciate any kind words you all have for us. So
cool. Who is it? I don't want to wait.
No, you have to wait.
Just say now.
You have Damn to wait. It. So anyway, so
it's Jack Kirby, all right? It's Jack Kirby.
From Ooh. The dead.
He's tough to get.
Black Lantern, Jack Kirby. All right. So Paul, thanks for stepping in for Josh. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Hope you had a lovely Thanksgiving.
I had a lot of cranberry sauce.
You did?
It's great.
Nice.
That's my favorite part.
All right, Connor, how you doing on the food?
I'm full.
You're full? Yeah.
Are you hot? I haven't eaten today.
Really?
I don't need to eat anymore.
Nice. I'm done.
I'm done. I'm still sweating turkey juice.
All right, so until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.